Hi, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and of course, as you know, every day, here at the same time, same place, on BBS Radio, we always have fabulous information for you. And no matter where you're listening in from, just know that telephone lines are going to be open to you later on in the hour. And if you'd like to chat, here's the telephone number to call into, 877-876-5227. Well, we have such a dynamic subject. I feel it's dynamic anyway, because I know how much belief affects my life, and I know how much it affects the lives of the many thousands of people that I've interacted with over the years and the people I interact with today. My guest is Ray Dodd. He's on the air with us from Boulder, Colorado. The title of his book is Belief Works, The Art of Living Your Dreams. Ray, welcome to the show.
Well, Donna, thank you so much for having me on.
Well, it is absolutely a delight having you with me, because there is so much in your book that I can say, when I went through this morning as I was reviewing my material for the show today, I thought, this is almost timely for me as well. Every one of us face challenges. Every one of us have our own unique journey we experience. And I would like for you to share a bit of your special journey that has gotten you to this point where you felt you could write this book from not just an intellectual positioning, but also from what I call that positioning of heart and feeling that enables people to connect with what you're saying. Tell us a bit about your journey, your mystical journey with practical experience that changed your life.
Well, I, like most people, was doing a lot of searching. I was really looking for a way to be happy, a way to stop being a victim, you know, a way to reach my desires and just have a great life. And I've read lots of wisdom traditions, and I even was in the seminary for a while, but I never could quite find anything that was really doing the trick for me. And then in 1996, I met Don Miguel Ruiz, who wrote the book, later wrote the book, The Four Agreements, and I spent 7 years with him. And he comes from a tradition called the Toltec Wisdom Tradition, and one of the things that they say is that the human mind is always dreaming, not just when you're asleep, but also when you're awake, and it dreams through a lens, a filter of all your beliefs and agreements and experiences about everything. And those things create the personal virtual reality that you project out into the world. And when I really started to see that for myself, then I made very, very powerful changes in my life. And it was so powerful for me that I started to really work with other people in the same way. And it has been a remarkable journey.
With your book, you open it with a quote from Mahatma Gandhi. And I want to read it because I feel that it's very real. Your beliefs become your thoughts. Your thoughts become your words. Your words become your actions. Your actions become your habits. Your habits become your values. Your values become your destiny. Now, Juan, when he was working with you, this is a man that is fascinating to me because he was a Western-trained physician, and yet he decided to embark on a journey of his own long before he met you. Tell us a little about this gentleman that had such a profound influence on your life.
Well, he was, in fact, he came from a family of healers, and they had a wisdom tradition, a shamanistic tradition that went back hundreds, maybe thousands of years through oral teachings. And when he was a teenager and a young man, he thought this was a bunch of malarkey. He didn't want to have anything to do with it. And so he became a medical doctor and eventually was a surgeon in a big hospital in Mexico City. And he just thought all his relatives were sort of crazy. And one evening he had a terrible accident in his car. And what he remembers is he remembers pulling two of his friends out of the wrecked car, and then he remembers pulling a third person out of the car. And that third person was his unconscious body. Now this brought up kind of an interesting question for a medical doctor. If I'm not my body and I'm not my mind, what am I really? And after this experience, he decided to go back and learn the teachings of his father and his grandfather and his mother, and it was so profound for him that he stopped his medical practice and started to teach in San Diego in a little place And he just started to get more and more people following him, and it blossomed into a best-selling book.
This is a journey that so many of us would say to ourselves, oh, wow, aren't you lucky you had this happen to you? I do appreciate your remarks in the beginning that we cannot help but dabble with the magic of belief, yet we often wield its wand like the sorcerer's apprentice, unaware of its true power. Reminds me of Mickey Mouse in Fantasia
with his wand. That's what I was thinking.
Just swinging it all over the place and creating pandemonium. Awareness, you say, is the solution. And you have a delightful tale in here of a mango tree. Share that tale with my listeners.
Well, you know, the idea is that perhaps the beliefs that we carry and the beliefs that really somewhat affect our lives very deeply and profoundly are things that we don't notice, that we don't even remember that we made these agreements, that we don't remember we made these bargains with ourselves. And very often we do things and we react in certain ways, and we are in some ways controlled by beliefs and decisions that we've made for ourselves that are long since forgotten. We don't really see what the powerful impact that our hidden beliefs have on us. And in the tale of the mango tree, it's just a fable about that.
Now, the mango tree describes the story in here that there is something that happens, and then there's a lot of fear that occurs with that particular happening. And then after that, everyone continues to adopt the fear.
That's right.
And when they adopt the fear, there is a time when everybody stays fearful, but they don't know why they were fearful. They don't know why they should be fearful, and they don't know why they continue to be fearful. They just stay fearful.
It's, you know, they're just rules that live in everybody's head, and they're things that we're supposed to do, and this is the way they are, and they don't really remember where this came from and why they made those agreements. And we do this in society, and we certainly do it in our personal lives. There are things that are very, very powerful for us as an adult that are no longer true, that they really are, in fact, at this point in our lives, just you know, lies.
And that is so hard for us to be able to observe in ourselves, I feel. I know that in my journey of life, there have been many experiences that I have had relative to so many different circumstances. And I look at it and I go, why did I have to be hit in the head with a 25-ton mallet? I didn't really need to have that experience. What was it that needed to wake me up? Habit. You have a habit, it's so ingrained, like you say, especially when it comes to an area of self-esteem.
Very much so. And, you know, so one of the reasons I call this book Belief Works, The Art of Living Your Dream, is that I think you are living your dream, that each one of us is absolutely living our dream, and all the people we're surrounding ourselves with and the things that we're involved in are a perfect reflection of what we've agreed to and the belief systems that we hold in our lives. And so becoming aware of that, really seeing as it is, and then starting to deal with it in a very conscious way is the art that we can create out of our lives.
And I think that is the beginning of liberation for an individual. And it's a very joyful experience in my own, well, how can I say, in my living space, when you let go of those habits that no longer serve you appropriately, there is this tremendous sense of joyfulness. At least it's been in my experience. So I just think that your book addresses that. You say our attention, and I'm quoting directly from your book, is imprisoned by the chatter of the mind with its opinions, assumptions, and declarations. What do the Toltec call that?
Well, they call that the mitote, the thousand voices in the marketplace, everybody talking and nobody listening. And it's really this idea that when we are little children, maybe even possibly before language, we have what I call tools of perception. And we are sensing the world and feeling the world, and we notice a lot about what's going on. And then as we grow up and all the adults teach us, we all of a sudden start to perceive the world really through our eyes, our ears, and that voice in our mind. And that voice in our mind is always telling us about how everything is. It has our attention all the time. And it's really not a tool of perception at all. It's an interpreter. It's an analyzer. And all of a sudden, this mitote in the mind, all this chatter, is running the show. And we have really lost our ability to notice what's going on.
That is something that I feel is so very, very hard to even come close to understanding unless you're fully present with where you are, period.
I agree with you, and so one of the things that I have my students do is I have them practice something I call stopping the world, and it's almost like a meditation practice, but it's really exercising another part of you, you know, not that part that is always running in the mind, but that part of you that perceives and that's aware. I have my students stop for 20 minutes and allow that dialogue to collapse and just get a feeling for what life is like, what they're like without that dialogue.
Is it a little scary for some of your students? Do they get sort of antsy and get a little panicky when they're going through this 20-minute exercise?
Very much so, because they're habituated to the point of, you know, this dialogue, this whole story is me. That's my identity, and my personal history and my identity is woven into it. And if I stop this, well, who will I be? And it is scary for them.
I can imagine. You give an example in your book that you put under the title The Mastery of Transformation. And I really liked this because it gave a thought patterning that was so good. And it was about the Hillside Construction Company. And they were having a real difficult time getting workers. Tell us how they made a transformation in their thinking to achieve what they wanted to achieve.
Well, what I noticed with them is they had a story, and their story was that we can't find good help, that the high schools aren't teaching carpentry trade, and the unions aren't in town, and you just can't find anybody to help you, and they're having lots and lots of labor problems. And what I noticed in really talking to them is that when you took away the story, there was just this pervasive point of view of we can't. And I helped them see that that's really what they were doing. And then when they saw that, they decided, okay, the belief we want to have is I can. That's the viewpoint they want to have. And let's see, our story will be, well, how are we going to deal with this? And so they decided that they would create a school and they would train people themselves. They would find people that had aptitude and wanted to learn this, and they would train them themselves. And within 2 years, they solved their problem.
You have a particular positioning regarding affirmation. Now, so many of us have felt that having a positive attitude and stating affirmations is of value. Your perspective is a little different. Tell us about that.
Well, I still think that, you know, of course, having a positive attitude and stating positive things is certainly a benefit. But I don't think belief is what you think is true. It's not an intellectual proposition. Most of what we say we believe are really just opinions. And what happens is that when we get stressed, when we get triggered, often our behavior is in contradiction to what we say we believe. So in fact, making real and lasting changes is about really dealing with the hidden fear-based beliefs. And when you're just not doing that, when you just go to the mind and you repeat positive affirmations and you put them on your mirror, you put them on your refrigerator, in some ways it's like painting over rust.
Now, you give a good illustration of that in a story of a couple. There was a couple, they had both had problems with alcoholism, and they ended up with a result that I thought was quite interesting. Share their story, because the wife was affected one way with her belief system and the husband with his.
Well, they were both recovering alcoholics, and in fact, what I've read is that the rate of success at AA is something like 15, maybe 20%. that it's certainly a program that helps a lot of people, but sometimes when we deal with issues like that, having affirmations, having 12 steps, convincing of ourselves of something may not be effective, because in some ways we're not really dealing with the real beliefs that are driving the behavior. And so in this case, this couple was, you know, supposedly very successful, and they actually started to teach recovery to other people. But when life got very stressful, her husband went right back to drinking and gambling and ruined their savings, because he never changed his beliefs. He just really traded one addiction for another.
Now, I want my listeners to know that we have as our guest this afternoon Ray Dodd and his wonderful book, Belief Works. Belief Works. This is a perspective that gives you as the individual the power to create what Ray describes as your own mythology, your own story, but understanding really what's behind your beliefs, no matter what your challenges are, what's in front of you, and we all have them, my goodness. That's what life is all about. Life is a school of experience that allows us to grow into what we have the greatness of potential to achieve. And part of that is living a dream. Ray, we hear this over and over again from so many different angles and avenues. Live your dream. Live your dream. Do you think many people know what their dream is, actually?
I think that they don't. And, you know, in the book, I have 7 keys for unlocking the true power of belief. And the first key I put in there is called, you are living your dream. You see, I think we are constantly projecting out into the world, you know, what we believe, and we are attracting to us and surrounding ourselves and involved with things that perfectly reflect that belief system. We are living our dreams right now, and if you don't like what's going on, one of the most powerful things you can recognize is that this is the dream you have agreed to. This is what you have chosen. This is what you support and really are investing your faith in. And so if you were this powerful, what could you do if you really realized that and started to do this consciously?
Now, give an example of how one can create that conscious attitude. Let's say someone's having a concern about money, and they've always been a hard worker. They've tried to follow all kinds of rules, and yet for some reason, they never become the millionaire they mouth all the time that they want to become, or live in a Hearst castle.
Well, sometimes I think that they may be trying certain things, but they really ought to listen to the dialogue in their mind and the things that they say. You know, I hear people say things like, you know, it takes money to make money, or, you know, I've never gotten the breaks that I really deserve, or, you know, so-and-so is rich because of this, and I don't have those things. And what they do is they have a story, and they continually support that story, and in fact, they insist that they're right about the story. And when you're right about something, then you're going to stay right where you are.
I like that section about the third gate of lucid living. Stop the world and give up the need to be right. Oh, my goodness. That is really a big, big step to take. How can someone release that? I've known of individuals that were so right about being right that they had no friends.
Well, for example, you know, what I think happens is that we can notice the beliefs that we have. We can notice what we've agreed to, but we're still really tied to it. And as long as we have a story, you know, this happened to me when I was a child, my mom did this, my dad did this, I can't get a break, da-da-da. What we're really doing is we're really pounding the table. We are waving the flag. It is true because we're right about it. It is supported, and this is where we're investing our faith. And when you give up the need to be right, all of a sudden it begins to collapse. It doesn't mean that it's not accurate, but you can start to build a different belief system, because if you insist on being right, you will stay right where you are.
I know you talked about a gentleman by the name of Michael, that you felt you weren't going to be able to assist him at all because he was absolutely right about everything.
And it's true. I think that, for example, when I have people come to me, one of the agreements I make with them, or I ask them to make with me, is I ask them to come empty. I say, I'm sure you've read lots of things and you know lots of things, but I'd like you to show up empty so we can have a conversation and you can consider a different point of view that is maybe something very different than you've ever considered. Because for us to really begin to grow and expand, I think we have to step off of this place of everything we know. Because as long as we're right, all we're going to see is what we know.
That's a real challenge. That is a big challenge. That's going to involve a lot of faith and a lot of trust.
Well, and the way I was convinced of it is because it felt really good. You know, I think our intelligence, our emotions are intelligent, and they're always giving us good messages. And really, the way I came to this is, you know, did I want to push the pain button or did I want to push the pleasure button? And what I noticed is, though, even though I was accurate about certain things, when I was right, those stories that I told made me suffer, and I didn't feel good. And when I gave up being right, I really felt a lot better.
I think experience is something that when we can take the gold from it and leave behind the garbage, we're better off. And we're often taught that we're supposed to carry scars and wounds as badges of honor because it means we've survived something. But what I've noticed with so many people is that sometimes those scars continue to bleed. There's not a Band-Aid in the world that can heal it until you're willing to let them go and make them okay as part of the experience, take the lesson and move on. That's sort of a simplistic way of looking at it. But it's a real discipline. I've known groups of people that work very hard at maintaining that positioning. How would you recommend that someone who has such deep wounds, that has such a story, using your word, has such a story, and they continue to tell it, and those wounds are opened again and again and again and again. What would you say to that person?
To really notice for 1 minute the story and notice how it makes you feel. And if the story makes you suffer, is it really the solution that you're looking for? You know, I think that originally these things, maybe whenever they happened, they were, you know, the emotions and the stories that we create and the strategies we create are to keep us safe and to keep us from getting hurt. But time passes, and after a while, the danger is gone, just like in the story of the mango tree. And the danger is gone, and you don't need these things anymore. And all they do is they work against you. They keep you from really experiencing life, and they're just stories that make you suffer. And is that really what you want?
You give a story about your own experience that took you to a whole new level of understanding. And it was when you were taking Aikido, the Japanese martial art derived from judo and the samurai sword arts. You were given an exercise by your teacher. Tell us about that exercise and how it enhanced your own sensory system.
Well, in the Aikido practice, I met a teacher who would just blindfold you and muffle your hearing and put you in the middle of the mat and then have people, attempt to attack you. And all you could do, really, is you couldn't hear them, you couldn't see them, you couldn't really feel them. So what I started to notice was I felt something, and I would move toward it. And what really happened is there was a sense I started to develop. And I really noticed that there's so much more than your eyes, your ears, and your physical senses, that in fact, everything that happens is preceded by some sort of energy, and you can feel that energy, that we as human beings are just so much more expansive than just our eyes, our ears, and our physical senses.
You have a section in your book called The Marriage of Opposites. And you say everything that is in balance embraces not doing and the marriage of opposites. You say to embrace and open up in gratitude to now. Explain a little bit of that to us.
Well, I think that sometimes we get caught in all this linear thinking, and certainly in this place of, you know, wanting to improve, being in self-improvement, wanting to be better. Sometimes what it really is it's a pursuit of there's something wrong with me and that I'm not good enough. And we live in a very much of a marriage or a balance of opposites, you know, night, day, male, female, high tide, low tide. And so one of the things I suggest to people is that, you know, you can breathe out and you can really sense that, you know, you're okay and everything is all right in this moment and there's nothing wrong with you. Everything is just as it should be. And you can breathe in and you can say, but I want to be different and I want to grow and I want to evolve and I want to learn. And those sound like contradictory statements, but they're really not. They actually live in absolute harmony. And they really, in some sense, support your own self-love, your own self-esteem.
You have so many wonderful comments in your book. I think it is not just insightful, but it might be able for many people to be able to touch the heart, the mind, as well as give that additional level of understanding about how we can improve ourselves and what we can do for ourselves. Your book, Belief Works. My guest has been Ray Dodd. Ray, I know we're close to coming to the end of our chat today. Give us your website, how people can reach you.
Yes, we're at www.everydaywisdom.us. That would be like United States. That's everydaywisdom.us.
Now, Ray, you offer so many different points of information, not just in your book, but you also have seminars and classes, so people can reach you through your website, find out more details, and that's everydaywisdom.us. We have about a minute before we're going to be going on break. Ray, what would you like to share with my listening audience this afternoon?
Well, what I have noticed through my work is that belief touches every thought we think, every word we say, every action we take, and that if you want to make, you know, profound and exciting changes in your life, it's really one of the most powerful things you can do is understand what beliefs you have and find the ones that are based in fear, that are no longer true, that aren't serving you, and work with those. It really opens up an expansive universe of possibility. And so what I tell people is believe you can.
Believe you can. Belief works. That I know as a truth. The art of living your dreams. Do you believe that your dreams are worth pursuing? Well, I think you'll find Ray Dodd's book a good one to have in your library. Belief Works, The Art of Living Your Dreams, Ray Dodd, and that's D like Donna, O-D-D. And he's also written some other materials. Ray, I want to thank you so much for being my guest today.
Well, thank you for having me, Donna.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Enjoy your wonderful summer ahead of you in Boulder, Colorado, one of my favorite places in the country. And just know that your work is going to touch a lot of people's lives. This is Donna Sebo. We are going to be taking a break for just a moment. Hey, telephone lines will be open, so get out that pad of paper, too. Don't forget that. 877-876-5227. This is Donna Sebo with the Hour of Mind Power, where we like to bring to you the finest and the best. But don't you go away. We've got some wonderful things to share. We'll be back in just a moment. Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227. And I want to let those of you who are in the state of Washington know that there is a community station that is now on 1700 AM, who is now carrying the Donna Sebo Show, and it is airing at 11 AM every morning during the week. So I wanted to pass that along to you. That's 1700 AM. Now, I know we've got a wonderful holiday that's coming up, the 4th of July, and it's such a big deal, and I want to share with you some recipes. And I came across one that I thought would be so much fun to fix, and it's really, really easy. So So have that tablet of paper handy, because I'm going to give it to you in a little bit of time. And it's called Cheese Stuffed Mini Peppers. You know those little peppers that you can get in the store? Well, this is something that would just be awesome to fix for a batch of people that are coming over. Because if you're like me, any time to have a party, woo, it's a good time. You want to do it. And good food is just perfect. And not only that, but you want to be sure that you make it easy on yourself. Goodness gracious, don't do like I've done so many times. You're so busy setting up for the party that by the time the party gets there, you're so busy being busy that your party's over and you go, did I have a chance to talk to anybody? You're so busy doing. So don't mimic me, whatever. So just anyway, I will be giving you that information in a bit. But with the 4th of July coming up, and it's such a special holiday, but with these holidays, there's often stories that come across my desk that will touch my heart and my mind in a very special way. And I'm going to share this one with you. It came to my attention today, and it's about Swede Ruskum. Now, this story really touched my heart because we have many veterans in our family, and it meant a lot to me because this man and his wife decided to do something very unique, and I'm going to share this with you this afternoon. Martha, Swede's wife, paid $20 for 37 pieces of metal from a Ho Chi Minh City street vendor a number of years ago. And they were staying in a hotel room. They were on a business trip, and he was stunned when he saw them because they were the U.S. military dog tags, the metal ID tags, issued to all servicemen and women. And each of them, of course, is stamped with the name of the wearer, serial number, blood type, and religion. And Martha said she found them in a wicker basket at a street bazaar mixed in with some old coins. And that's why she picked them up. She laid them all out on the bed in the hotel room. And he said as he was watching her do that, he just naturally went to his own dog tags that he had around his neck. And he had been wearing them for more than 50 years. He had served time in Korea. And he said, today I'm the vice president of sales for an animal feed supplier, and that's been my professional status for a good deal of time. But he said, I still remember my serial number and the feel of those metal tags against my chest. He said, there isn't a veteran that doesn't remember that and doesn't feel the way I do. He said, when you're in the military, those tags are a part of your body and your very soul. And he said, when he was discharged from the service, he hung up his tags on his office wall, and for a lot of years, they just stayed there. He said he didn't give them a thought. He said, I got busy with my wife, my family, and my job. But when my wife, well, we were in this hotel room, pulled these tags out that belonged to unknown soldiers, he said, I was really overcome. And he said, I knew that I had something special to do. And that was a chance to make 37 veterans' lives whole again. And he said to his wife, we need to return these to their owners. Well, after they finished their business trip and they were back home, they took on their project. They sent information on the tags to the U.S. Bureau of Military Records, confirming all of the information on the tags, their authenticity. And then his son, who's an Illinois state senator, they found a private investigator to help locate the former soldiers and or their families. And the investigator was able to find addresses, but he couldn't find any addresses more recent than the early 1990s. So Swede and his wife Martha wrote a lot of letters. A year went by. And then they heard from a woman out of Phoenix, Arizona. Her name was Ann Sandoval. One of the tags that they had belonged to her nephew, Alfred Moreno Jr., who was a Marine infantryman. He had been killed by a landmine in 1969 when he was 20 years old. And, of course, this affected Swede quite deeply. He said, here I had a tag in my hand that had been sitting in a basket in a foreign city. And he said 30 years had passed since this young man had died. Well, Ann Sandoval was very skeptical. Why would an Illinois couple have her nephew's dog tags? Well, they talked to her more than once, and it took a while to convince her that they weren't trying to set up a scam, and exactly what happened is exactly what happened. So they got together. Martha and Swede flew to Phoenix to meet Anne, and this was in September of 2002, and she came out, and she greeted us, and she was holding a folded American flag, the one that had draped Alfred's casket. And she was about to shake hands when she spotted Alfred's dog tag, which Martha wore on a chain around her neck. And my wife removed the silver dog tag and gave it to her, and they said there was a sacred moment when this happened. And Anne held the tag in her hands, and you could see all kinds of emotions that were just going through her. And she gave each of us a hug, and we just were so grateful that we were able to make this connection. And later on, when they had a chance to sit down in Anne's living room, she told us, told them how she and her husband had adopted Alfred and seven of his children after Alfred's mother and sister had died in 1966. She said, we already had three children, and it was wall-to-wall kids. But Alfred had always kept his spirits up. And she said it had disappointed them when he dropped out of high school to enlist. But he said, I have to fight for my country. She talked about her adopted son, Alfred, for an hour. And she put his dog tags around her neck. She said, Alfred's body came back with only a few of his belongings. Now everything's home where it should be. Now, Swede and his wife, Martha, have returned 19 more tags since that experience with Anne, and they're working very, very hard to locate the rightful owners of the rest. And each time they return tags, they feel like they've helped in some way to heal a void that has been in the life of a family. That a family has lost a loved one to war deserves no less. We have a wonderful holiday that's coming up, and we're going to be enjoying ourselves. We're going to be with loved ones. The 4th of July represents a lot, and it represents also to us a reminder that sacrifices are always made to be able to preserve freedom. Freedom is not something that's just there. We have to earn the right to have it. And so many people have walked a line of difficult times, difficult circumstances, to make what they felt was the right choice to preserve those freedoms. And I think that it's so important we remember them and honor them. And my hat is off, so to speak, and I salute Martha and Swede for what they took on as an opportunity to bring a healing into the lives of many families. Donna Sebo here. By the way, if you would like to chat with me this afternoon, give me a buzz. I'd be happy to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Telephone number to call in to is 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Oh, by the way, I got an email from a woman named January, and she sent me the cutest story, and I thought I'd share it with you this afternoon. In the email, there was a picture of this elderly couple, and they both were on their oxygen tanks. They had, they just looked like they were at the end of their road. They didn't look too good at all. And then this story followed underneath. And the story was that there was an elderly woman, 80 years of age, who had stolen a can of peaches. And she has to go in front of a judge because she was accused of theft. And so the judge asks her if she did steal this can of peaches. She said, yes, I did. He said, why did you steal the can of peaches? She said, because I was hungry. And he said, well, how many peaches are in the can? And she said, well, there's six peaches in the can. He said, okay, you are going to be spending 6 days in jail. Well, before he could make the final statement about the verdict as to what she was going to be sentenced for and to, and the amount of time in jail, her husband, who had been sitting there in the courtroom, said, Your Honor, may I speak to you for a moment? So the judge, before banging his gavel, said, yes, please do. He said, My wife also stole a can of peas. That really got me. Anyway,
Donna,
I enjoyed that.
We have a phone call.
Wonderful.
Yeah,
we have a caller.
I'll put them on.
All right, that's wonderful. Donna Sebo here. Don't forget, you can call in to 877-876-5227. Whatever you do, don't steal a can of peas. This is Donna Sebo. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Hi, Donna. It's Therese, and I'm calling from California.
Oh, where in California?
I'm calling from La Verne, California.
La Verne, California. Well, I'm so delighted that you're with us this afternoon. Now, quickly, I'm going to tell you, we will be going to a break in about a minute and a half, so
okay.
Stay on the line. Don't go away, because we'll come right back to you.
Okay.
Okay, Therese, the first thing that I'm looking at with you is setback, patience, take a deep breath, get your second wind, things are going to break through and open up for you. Apparently, you have really been working very earnestly towards an area of accomplishment. It's not so much monetarily. It's a combination of things. It's as if you're trying to prove something to yourself. It's as if this is something that is allowing you to bury the past. It is also involving a real level of discipline. I mean, you are really paying attention. And then you're also making a breakthrough on what I feel is an intuitive level as well. So there's a lot going on here. Now, I know we're going to go to a break, Therese. Stay with us. When we come back, I'll finish with what I have to say to you, all right?
Okay.
All right. So this is Donna Sebo. We have Therese from La Verne, California. We're going to be continuing to task with her, but we've got a break coming up here. Don't you go away. We'll be right back. Hi, this is Donna Sebo. This is the Hour of Mind Power. We were on break. We're going back to Therese, who is in La Verne, California. Therese, are you still with me?
Yes.
Wonderful. One of the things I want to caution you about is don't get stuck with what I feel are fears that other people are trying to superimpose on you.
Okay.
You have got so much working for you if you maintain your discipline and you're consistent. My dear, you're going to do fabulously, but it is going to be a lot of work. It's not something that you just go wave a magic wand over. It's not going to work that way.
Right.
So your discipline and your follow-through is making all the difference in the world. And there's someone around you, my dear, that is so afraid that you're going to grow up and away from them because they do not have a good level of self-esteem. Don't worry about them.
Okay.
Be an example for them. Be your own person. And you just lead by example. And if they get stuck in their muck, that's their hang-up. Don't you go that route. You've already been there. You've already done that. You don't need to do it again. What question would you like to ask me today?
Oh, Donna, you're great. I don't even think I have a question. That's good. But, okay, I'm going to throw one at you. What's the name of my spirit guide?
I'm not able to answer that for you.
Okay, and that's okay.
Let me say this to you. If you choose to develop more of your own intuitive capabilities,
mm-hmm.
I want you to be aware that your talents are going to develop outside of the box of expectations. In other words, be aware that there is a female that will be with you frequently, but not all the time.
Okay.
And there are going to be different individuals that will come in and out of your experience. They're not going to stay with you all of the time. And I know there will be some people that perhaps would have a different perception, and that does not disturb me at all. But I will share with you something I learned many, many years ago. And that is, when you are growing and developing as an individual, and as your talents and skills mature into their own level of wisdom and expression, you will find those people, those guides, if you will, that are around you are going to change. And that's what's happening to you now. You are not going to have the same personalities around you. just like when you go to school, you have a kindergarten teacher, you have a junior high teacher, you go to college, you do that. When you're in college, you're not going to go back to kindergarten for training, are you?
No.
The same thing occurs as you grow and develop as a person. I would like for you to know that your talents and your capabilities intuitively are not going to be like many of the people you've had associations with. I want you to trust yourself. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
I'm so glad. Because you are very talented, and you'll be able to use your talents and abilities in ways that will not typically be utilized by others. And that's perfectly all right. That's the way it should be. It has to express itself through you in your own unique or with your own unique individuality.
Okay.
So be open to learning from anybody and everybody around, but remember, you are the one that will sculpt how you demonstrate your talents. Trust yourself.
Okay, Donna, sounds good.
I thank you for your call. You have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Tony.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Sebo, and that telephone line, as you know, every afternoon is open for you, 877-876-5227. Something I want to share with you, too, are the guests that are going to be coming up. Now, tomorrow, we're going to be talking about unhypnosis. Yes, you'll have to listen to find out about it. Steve Taubman is going to be my guest, and it's a perspective that I just really like. I think one of the greatest things that I experience with my show, and believe me, I grow from it just as much as I feel my sharing with you enables you perhaps to grow in new directions with your thoughts or explore new perspectives. It just allows you to realize there are so many facets to life. There are so many different kinds of perceptions. I'll repeat the same word. And it's good to know about these people. So Steve has his experience that he's going to be sharing. Barbara Stanny is dynamite. She's going to be with me on Monday. Overcoming under-earning. Do you deal with issues of money? Barbara will give you some insights. This is a lady that's pretty savvy. Now, this is very significant. Starting the 1st of July, my show is moving to 11 a.m. in the morning Pacific time. So I'll be on from 11 a.m. until noon. 11 a.m. until noon. So I invite you to write that down, put it on your calendars, on your computer screens, so that you'll know you won't be hearing me from 3 to 4 on BBS Radio. You're going to be hearing me from 11 to noon. And we're going to be talking on the 3rd of July with Charles Cerami. We're going to be talking about history of the United States, Two Young Patriots, and that's the title of his book, Young Patriots. Then we're going to be taking off the holiday on the 4th. Yes, all of us involved with BBS Radio, staff and management, we are going to be taking the day off, but you're going to be able to hear wonderful music the whole day. So you can turn on the computer and listen to great music. And then on Wednesday the 5th, we're going to be talking about animals, 5 simple steps to healthy pets. Lisa Newman is going to be my guest, and she's involved in veterinary work and holistic approaches. And then we're going to be talking about colon cancer. And this is something that's going to be on the 6th, and it's so important to have information about health out there. We want to stay well. We want to understand how to keep ourselves well. And then on the 7th, we're going to be talking about how it feels, what it takes, what it means to be a Japanese American. Gil Asakawa is going to be my guest. Fascinating, fascinating man. Wonderful, wonderful book that he's put out, so I get to share all of that with you. This is Donna Sebo. My goodness, we're out of time. As always, it has been a wonderful hour. I'm so grateful to Ray Dodd, who is my guest today. Belief does work, you know, and it does make a difference, but we have to know what we believe, and if we don't like what we're demonstrating, we need to shift, don't we, so that we have that belief demonstration that works for us. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Believe in yourself. Believe in your talents and capabilities, because there's nobody else like you on this planet. And boy, we need everything that you've got. So pick it up, dust it off, buff it up, make it sparkle, and let it shine, because you make a difference. This is Donna Siebel. You have a fabulous day, and I'll be talking with you right here, same time, same place tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.